perfume is the message. Money makes a dance. Love is the product. The joke is in. The joke is in. The joke is in your face.
I'm Are You Serious? And this is my show. Who was the most perverted president? What do cops really want? Why is 70s porn better? These are all questions that our guest, Dr. Hal, a.k.a. Hal Robbins, has answered at his Ask Dr. Hal performances at 12 Galaxies in San Francisco. And we'll be talking to this most sub of sub-genii today. But first, we've got Jeff Deal, Steve Robles, and Diana Brown sitting around a table.
Yes, we are, and it's delightful to be here and see all your shining faces. Gentlemen, it's the holiday season. How you feeling?
I'm feeling the spirit. And
excellent.
Jeff is being forced to feel the spirit, as we can evidence by these stockings. Two stockings held over
noticed.
The quaint little fireplace.
You know, stockings
of our studio
reminds me of another undergarment that some people hope will
be actually
filled.
My idea to put those there. Sorry.
Just for the record, it was
but I've
not,
been brainwashed.
It was not Jeff's idea to hang the socks. But there are other...
No, it was.
They're not sexy stockings.
No, no, they're not. But they could be later. And
well, we just watched Bad Santa, you know, last night, and how they take the stockings off the Cloris Leachman old grandma character and use those for their...
Well, grandma may not be the bouncing, bubbly girl she once was, but if Santa and a few different radio stations have their way, it will be many a saucy undergarment that will be filled this holiday season.
Filled with what?
Well, I'm glad you
That's
asked,
what you don't
Steve
want
to because... If a few radio stations in California and elsewhere have their way about it, it will be the best Christmas ever.
Oh.
That's right. Apparently, California radio station KLLY.
Double D-Y.
Thank you. That's the first double D reference of the day away. They are going to provide whichever lucky listener wins their holiday-themed contest with a special prize. Who wants to guess what that prize is?
Fun bags.
That's another word for breast enlargement surgery. Now, this trend is not just left to good old California. Apparently, Florida is getting in the act, too.
So guys can't get, like, breast reduction surgery? Because they
actually...
Do. Can women get breast reduction surgery, which, in my opinion, ought to be illegal, but...
You know, that's a question for Dr. Hal. Should that be allowed to be illegal? We'll be talking to him later. It seems that in Florida, the MJ Morning Show announced that Santa Claus is bringing, and this is a good line, I want Steve to read it. What's Santa bringing, Steve?
A big bag of boobs to your town this holiday season for
that's
their
right.
Holiday Hooters contest.
Now, apparently this show is broadcast on a couple of other Clear Channel stations. So let's just start with that. Boobs for Christmas, guys. What do you think?
It is a bit of hypocrisy for Clear Channel to be doing it. I'm not, you know, one way or the other. What do I care what people... But
well,
I mean, you know, they're supposed to be about...
I think this is Clear Channel's way of celebrating the whole new dawn of golden age of post-republicanism. I think they're like...
No, they've been doing it for years, though. There's a several years going now.
No, they do. After that Janis Jackson thing, they fucking curled up like a snail under some salt. They
you can give
that
away.
Was when they kicked Howard Stern off those stations and like and fired.
You
Bubble
can give
Love
away
Sponge
boobs, just don't show the nipples. I mean, it
right.
makes cultural sense to me.
Exactly,
I'm saying they wouldn't have done this contest.
Doesn't
years
make
ago.
Sense. Actually.
I'm saying they did. You don't know what you're talking about.
I'm saying
about.
There was a... You don't know fuck all,
they've been
all,
doing
dude.
It for a couple
the
of years.
The love between Dino
you're the,
and
you're the
Robert.
Expert on what?
Unbelievable.
Nothing.
I did some reading on this topic, unlike you, obviously.
Jeff did do some
but
research.
But you have a great record, you know, going off of last week's show of completely misinterpreting what we were talking about. So go proceed.
What were we talking about?
Yeah, exactly.
You guys love as much as I do when these two do this, because it's really one of my favorite parts of the show.
Okay, so is you're it, saying that there really? Was no Clear Channel reaction to the fucking FCC fines and all that bullshit that happened.
I'm saying that they've done this breast contest for several years now. They haven't stopped.
There's no relationship between the taboo against showing a specific, like, nipple. Localized body part and the breast enlargement. I mean, our taboos are what they are. They don't have to make sense.
That's right. And nipples are naughty.
And this is not...
taboobs.
This is not the...
taboobs!
Taboob.
That's right. The boobs are okay. It's the nipples that are taboo. So it's that's the boobs part.
So anyway,
taboo.
I mean, gals want them.
Gals want them. Guys
radio
love them.
Radio stations want to give them away.
Stations want ratings.
That's right.
Want ratings.
And what I love is, you know, they have placed this in interesting advertising. You know, like there's the Toys for Tots campaign on a lot of stations, but the boobs are right above that because boobs are more important. Now, not everybody seems.
And there's also, I mean, the toys aspect of it.
That's true. And, you know, who's to say what's a toy?
Exactly.
I mean, are you, if you were sitting on Santa's lap right now, what would you be asking for Christmas?
I don't think I would be asking for boobs, actually.
I think he'd be asking to get out of Santa's lap.
I think, a ride home or mercy of some sort.
Well, I guess, you know, sitting out there, our beloved listeners would probably be able to cite in their own minds a few people that might object to this, and they'd probably come up with this one first. National Organization of Women. They said the Clear Channel stations are, and I quote, promoting potentially dangerous plastic surgery and marketing unrealistic and unhealthy images of women.
I mean, they're definitely right on the first part of that. And apparently the girls are going to have to pay for their own follow-up doctor visits.
Exactly. That's a very good point.
That's like when they give you that car on The Price is Right and they don't tell you that you're going to have to pay like a shitload of fucking taxes on it. Right. It's kind of that.
It's true.
It is kind of a lump of coal.
I mean,
implanted right into the boob.
I don't know. I think the whole thing of winning prizes and having them ruin your life is pretty much the great cosmic lesson that American capitalism can teach everybody.
There are people that say the lottery ruined my life, and I just don't think they know where to shop. No, I'm kidding about that. Apparently,
want to mention real quick that people can read about this on Tenzin Monkeys.
They can, shame on me because that's right. Where I got the story. I didn't just wander down a street and have this story flung at me. No,
you didn't
enter
a contest that you heard on the radio.
Right. Jeff, you're outing me as a... No, I'm kidding. I didn't really enter a contest at all. I was where we should all be, exploring Tenzin Monkeys. And this, along with some interesting stories about George Bush's face. Boobs and George Bush. I mean, it is kind of serendipitous that the two appeared on the site at the same time now, isn't it?
We were thinking about boobs in two different ways, I guess. An obvious joke. But,
but one that still had to be touched on. Speaking of touching... you brought up a good point a few minutes ago that, you know, plastic surgery is not always the first time it works the charm kind of deal. And the thing these contests are being very careful to say is any additional costs incurred pre and post surgery are the sole responsibility of the winners. And this is the part I also loved. Remember, only one winner per household. So what are we seeing?
Does that mean only one boob? You got to pay for the second one?
Well, the head of the household is a boob.
Is this a protection against lesbian couples or something? It could be a Clear Channel.
I don't know. I think that's a bad idea, though, because they're missing out on, like, radio gold with the possibility of giving, like, a mother-daughter breast implant.
Could you imagine three generations that get enhanced simultaneously?
Oh, man, that would be amazing.
I mean, this happens all the time.
That's a holly jolly Christmas.
This is being done by parents and children all over America. Mothers and daughters are going together to get their breasts.
Really?
Is that actually happening?
Yeah, that's
definitely
something
that only happening
in my fantasy life. No, I do believe I have read that this
RU's
does
head
go on.
Like
it'll
about
be a rite
4:30 in the morning.
Well, you know, I'm not surprised to hear that. Are you? I mean, we're looking at 16-year-olds are getting Botox to preserve that youthful, idyllic expression, and right to that point. One of the radio stations in the California Central Valley. Wow. Now, apparently, I'm so excited. I can't even speak today. Apparently, in this particular town in the Central Valley, there's already an extra focus on body image coming from their local gym and a cosmetic surgeon 2 hours away in Beverly Hills. So they've decided to jump on this bandwagon of Jeff pointed out ratings. And right above their contest for tickets to Disney's High School Musical, they add a second contest for bigger boobies. You know, Christmas is coming. thing. And they want to send, along with the messages of love and family and the birth of baby Jesus, that maybe everyone is nestled snug in their beds. But the visions floating in their heads are not necessarily of sugar plums, although sugar plums is a relative term.
Yeah.
So yes, one could think of them as sugar plums.
I don't know, but I think I've seen this Disney like high school musical thing, and that talk about mixed messages. I think my hand will be nestled in my pants for they won't allow them to kiss, but the girls' mini skirts are like. Basically,
belts.
Yeah, basically.
Now, one contest has a particular
vagina hiding belts.
Whoa! One contest has a particular doctor that you have to use, Dr. Corindian, and perhaps Dr. Corindian.
Dr. Bombay.
Dr. Corindian will exclaim from his Beverly Hills site, "A happy breastmas to all, and may your sweater fit tight."
We're here with Hal Robbins, a renowned underground comic artist, performer, author, and the most genius of subgeniuses. And you may have heard of him on the Subgenius radio show, Puzzling Evidence. And I'm looking at some books, including The Meaning of Lost and Mismatched Socks and Dinosaur Alphabet. So he is the author, and as we mentioned earlier, he performs at 12 Galaxies in a wonderful thing called Ask Dr. Hal. And I think maybe the second half of this interview we will actually dedicate entirely to asking Dr. Hal. But before I ask you about some aspects of your career, I do have to ask you, what do cops want anyway?
What do cops want?
Yes.
Besides donuts and collegiality and safety from the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, they want respect. They want respect for their mission as cops. And if you remember that, you can usually get along well with them. But it has also been said that if you have a problem and you call the cops, what you have then is a problem. And cops.
Two problems. So you have this excellent book that I've never read called The Meaning of Lost and Mismatched Socks. And tell us what this particular treatise is about.
Well, it's what the title suggests. It's less an explanation of the phenomenon of lost and mismatched socks than the meaning of lost and mismatched socks. And I have attempted to infuse such explanations as I have given with meaning, a meaning which this particular vexing problem that all people seem to suffer in one degree or another might have. Toward the end of the book, it takes a fictional arc, which the publisher did not approve of. And, in fact, the book has not been successful. But I might sell some.
You could associate it perhaps with the Ren and Stimpy episode.
I mentioned that in the book. In fact, the Lost Sock Planet figures very heavily in it toward the end. You might see there's the two-page illustration of the probable evolution of sock-based life forms. And I might have that one in my art show that's coming up in New York, which mostly features the art from the book Dinosaur Alphabet, which is my most recent book.
Now, could these mismatched socks, could this be a mutant species of some sort? Are they...
Not really, but they can become sports if they are true singletons, but not mutants in the classic sense, since they do not change, although I did cover the possibility that they might metamorphose out of all resemblance to socks and thus be unrecognizable. But this would be through a process of wear and attrition.
I think that's what happens in my house, actually.
It might, because, of course, they are only pieces of cloth which can succumb to frequent launderings and dryings. But the book starts with a slow examination of possibilities and moves on from there to more exotic theories. And I wrote it under a nom de plume of Dr. Perditus Pedal, a fictional construction, since I didn't really want to bring myself into it too much. But Perditus Pedal, as Latinists...
He's a 15-year-old homosexual... No, never mind.
Well, it means lost socks. Perditus means lost. Pedal means socks. He is himself a lost socks. Sock. The book is dedicated to his missing wife, the other of the pair, and he himself travels to the sock world at the end, inside a giant sock. It might be an easier approach to the book, those who want to get it, to go to the index in the back, which I carefully compiled, and move from the topics listed in the index to the topics in the book, but there are always many different ways to approach a book.
And this is recommended, by the way, by Mark Laidlaw, John Shirley, Rudy Rucker, and Winston Smith. So
yes, they like
people. People no longer read. I've been told by the publishing industry that people no longer read recommendations, which is unfortunate because so many of us are so good at getting great recommendations.
Well, fortunate for me, since I didn't get any recommendations for my second book until after it was printed.
And would this be the dinosaur alphabet that I'm looking at?
Yes.
Tell us what's up with that.
Well, you should open it and look at it. It's got a simple structure. The 26 letters of the alphabet are employed, and I created an alphabet, which you see on your left, a decorated alphabet, where each letter features the dinosaur, which is discussed in a small poem, a four-line quatrain, describing the dinosaur and its probable motivations and experiences. However, aside from this simple approach, the back section contains notes where I go rather thoroughly into defending my assertions, some of which actually are scientifically controversial, but I expected more reaction than so far I've gotten. Everyone seems content to endorse it, but perhaps they haven't read it as thoroughly as they might.
So they should be more fearful of endorsing this book?
Oh, I don't think so.
Lovely.
I hope they will endorse it.
It looks lovely. I feel almost like a coffee table book. Who published
it? Well, thank you. It's published by Frog, which is a division of North Atlantic Books. They also published Meaning of Lost and Mismatched Socks and Alien Apocalypse 2006.
It looks like they spent a pretty penny on... But this reminds me of the only time I ever met R. Crumb. I was carrying around a High Frontiers magazine that was like 11 by 17 with a pink cover on it. And he just looked at me and said, "You can't afford to do that."
Do you have a favorite letter or a favorite dinosaur here?
Oh, I have some that I'm less satisfied with than others. I like Zuniceratops, the Z dinosaur at the end. But, of course, I come to it as an amateur and really realized as I did the book that I didn't know enough to do it, but I had to do it because I'd spent the advance.
I think that's been the case with every book I've ever done.
Yeah, actually. Well, it impels you forward.
And I see we have some comic books here. You have a long history with the comics.
Yes, unfortunately, I wasn't able to get my hands on these comics, and if I can't get them, think how much trouble other people have. They are kind of rare. But I think you can get everything I've ever done and probably any underground comic from Don Donahue in Oakland, who has the giant warehouse at Apex Novelties. I might go there to get copies of mine. I think the rarest comic that I was ever in, besides that one, is Bob's Favorite Comics. Have you ever seen that?
No, I missed that.
Well, it's no wonder that you haven't seen it because, first of all, the run was underprinted, and secondly, they were all stored in a warehouse where an enormous explosion from an illegal fireworks factory destroyed the entire inventory. Only a few copies remain. I have some somewhere.
These should be collector's items, then.
They are, definitely. I wonder if Don has any over there and what price he asks for them. Yeah. That one there I sell when I go to comic book conventions.
This is a Cryptic Crave number
it's
one.
Called, no, it's called Grave Yarns.
Grave Yarns.
It's an anthology.
Published by Cryptic.
It's from Cryptic Entertainment and Fantoom Publishing Company. It is a horror comic, and it anthologizes stories that I did for other horror comics in this extremely unknown line of comics. They were called Tomb Tales, and three of my stories from Tomb Tales are enclosed in that issue of Grave Yarns, and one story that was especially composed for that issue of Grave Yarns. If anyone wants to get them, it's not impossible. You can get them from the publisher over the internet. In fact, I'm afraid that's the only way you can get them.
Well, what was the whole thing with underground comics? I mean, you used to be able to buy them like in the 60s and the 70s. You used to be able to buy lots of underground comics.
Yes.
And then it seems to have given way to sort of the Neil Gaiman, Alan Moore kind of graphic novel kind of stuff.
Well, there are a number of reasons for that.
Yeah.
One of them is the failure of the distribution system. When the police began systematically attacking head shops, stores protested that they were not head shops, but the police would point to the presence of comics in the stores to prove they were head shops. Therefore, the stores got rid of the comics. At the same time, comic book stores began to close. There are 1,000 or less comic book stores in the United States at the present. And all distribution systems go through the bottleneck of one right-wing distributor who hates underground comics. Many stores were not allowed to put underground comics out for sale because local prosecutors would go in and find them and then make a big name for themselves locally by talking about how such and such a store sold dirty comics to our kids and so forth, even though underground comics say for adults only on the cover. So the Neil Gaiman type, which you mention, are less controversial, are approved by the distribution system and this particular distributor, whose name is Steve Geppi, and therefore are still approved.
And his address is.
This is all available, as everything is all available on the internet, and a Google search will tell more than I ever can in this short time.
How do you spell Geppi?
Capital G, a little E, two P's, and an I.
Computer search.
So I guess I have to change subject because I just...
You're the host, man.
I drifted off there for a moment.
Well, it's a sad thing because these underground comics were great.
Binky Brown.
Binky Brown is a masterpiece.
You can't find stuff like that anymore.
But Justin Green had to paint signs for
this is what I was thinking of earlier, is the hinge there, I think, maybe between the underground comics and the graphic novel was raw. You think so? I mean, they were sort of like somewhere in between those two things. And that magazine, Raw?
That's interesting.
Well, there were
graphic
novels
Spiegelman.
Before Raw appeared. They've gotten little attention. But Raw, with its large, aggressive format and penetration of different markets, brought a different generation of comics into view. And it is unfortunately true that some publishers of underground comics became set in their ways and unwilling to accept anything that didn't fit into their idea of what an underground comic was, that is, about hippies, drugs, and the 1960s. And they would regularly reject some of the most innovative creators who came along around the time that Raw came out. And Art Spiegelman is very good at this type of creation and promotion, too.
Well, I think what we should do is take a break, listen to some music, and then come back and ask Dr. Hal some questions.
When will you believe?
This is Doug Smith, radio operator. I'm going to bring you a piece of that green cheese for sure. This tape is copyright 1982 by the Subgenius Foundation.
The first step is that you make the art. The second step is that you mail the art somewhere. And then you destroy the art in the mail. And then you claim it on insurance. Make the art, destroy the art, claim the art, and you will make much more on that art piece than you would have in any other way.
Don't you think it would be a good idea for you to turn the radio on?
Yes, you'll turn the machine on.
Well, it is a beautiful world out there, all right. Take, for instance, the city of Chicago earlier this month. It was filled to overflowing with Wookiees, Warlocks, and Japanese robots as thousands flocked to the annual World Science Fiction Convention at the Hyatt Regency Hotel. But at the cheaper hotel across the street, a group of people too weird for most science fiction fans to comprehend were holding a little convention of their own. These wackos call themselves the First Church of the Subgenius, and they include, in their, to say the least, eccentric membership...
What do they believe in? Everything. Who do they believe in? A mysterious character named Bob.
I'm sorry I haven't time for social obligations.
There is another world.
Who are they winning souls for, Satan or Jesus?
We are not, then, alone in our battle.
Indeed.
The rise and fall of Atlantis, the erection of the pyramids and other monuments seen here, which no slopeheads could build alone. Oh, here they are now, the miracles of the Old Testament. And all these and more events are so inextricably interwoven in the invisible background war between Jehovah and the Axis.
Here we see a man, the barbarian.
Yes, it's true.
I work at night.
The Subgenius Convention is in a hotel in Chicago at this very moment. They cannot get into the hotel. It started off as an innocent convention. It has turned into the last holdout of the Subdini.
We're taking over these mics.
Until we get all nine demands, both heads are not returned to this room.
No heads for nobody.
Shut down the music off.
We're back with Hal Robbins, a.k.a. Dr. Hal, and tell our audience a little bit about the Ask Dr. Hal performance. At least our folks here in San Francisco can go see it.
Well, the Ask Dr. Hal show runs every Wednesday night at 12 Galaxies. We generally get started around 10 o'clock, but if you come in earlier, you have an opportunity to socialize. Once the show takes place, we would prefer you socialize less. But 12 Galaxies is at 2565 Mission Street at 22nd Street. And it is every Wednesday night. I try not to miss a play date, although I'm going to be in New York for my art show in January and miss one play date during that month.
And people can also find a few clips from this on YouTube, I believe.
That's true. There is a YouTube clip from the show as it was when it was at the Odeon Bar. And there are actually a number of different clips featuring me on YouTube, but they are not all in the same place. There's one, for example, or perhaps two, of the dedication of the Never Was Hall. Have you heard of that? Never Was Hall.
I can't say.
Steam-powered Victorian house on wheels, which was at this year's Burning Man. And I presided at the dedication of the vehicle. And what a vehicle it is. We're going to continue to work on it. It did have some mechanical difficulties when it got going. But in the shipyard where it was constructed, it could only be tested going 25 feet this way and that. And out in the desert, when they opened it up, the engine sheared off the drivetrain, and it was thought that out there under those conditions, we couldn't repair it. Although later on, it was repaired. But until it was, we had the pleasure of being pulled around by an industrial steam engine. So in the pilot house of the Never Was Hall, which is, it's a Victorian house, and this is a bay window sticking forward, it was great to be in there with the officers and the captain looking out through the windows and looking along the length of the steam engine and seeing all the little rods and things moving as the entire assemblage rumbled across the desert. It was very pleasant, and we're going to continue working on it. And
will you only be able to see this at Burning Man, or will...
I think it may be back at the shipyard now, but for the most part, yes, it goes to where preposterous vehicles flourish the most, Burning Man.
I saw a steam-powered vehicle at the Laughing Squid party.
That was the steam car. It is an ancillary feature to the Never Was Hall.
That was
fantastic. And it also is lots of fun to ride in, particularly over the desert, getting bicyclists and hippies to get out of your way. It, like Never Was Hall, was engineered by Kimrick Smythe, and the Never Was Hall was built and created by Kimrick and by Shannon O'Hare and others. Anyway, the YouTube shows my dedication of the Never Was Hall. There's also, speaking of Shannon O'Hare, a speech where I discussed Satan at length at a show dedicated to that personage, put on by Shannon O'Hare. There's also on YouTube, you have to look for it, me making a speech about flying reptiles at the Exploratorium when Flash Tompkins, Dana Albany, and Tony Jonick built a giant pterosaur model out of auto parts.
This is great. I will include as many links as possible at areyouseriousradio.com.
Well, I can send you some. I put out a weekly publication of my own, which has to do with my show, which goes to a certain list, and all these links are included in it. And if I can send it to you and it won't be rejected by spam filters, as happens to many people I try to send it to, all those links will be present within it.
Well, I always look at the email that comes with the little spam notice on it because you never know what you're going to get. But let's play Ask Dr. Hal for a few minutes. And Diana Brown, do you want to ask?
Well, I do. Earlier in this show, we just talked about a popular radio contest, several actually across the nation, where the stations are giving away breast augmentation surgery as a prize. So our question to you is, do you perceive a time when plastic surgery will become as common as cable TV or perhaps even mandatory?
Is plastic surgery not already as common as cable TV? Mandatory would be crossing a different frontier. The population itself would have to be smaller for that to be practicable.
There are smaller only so many in the sense of the amount or...
in the sense of the overall number, because skilled practitioners will always be needed to perform these surgical operations. There are not enough on the planet at the moment to convert mass populations into large-breasted subjects.
What if you converted every soldier into a surgeon, would that be enough?
It would take more training and thus, in our method of doing things, more expense than is currently available.
So, I mean, if everybody in the world were forced to be conventionally attractive, would the genii form an underground somewhere? And
they are already, because what is attractive to a subgenius does not always accord with these ideas of comeliness.
Now, you are the master of church secrets of the Church of the Subgenius, is that correct?
That is so.
What are those secrets?
Well, there are many, but they are not a series that I could list in order. But, of course, any religion has its secrets. Some are secrets of policy, some are secrets of obscurity of theology, and some, of course, are secrets of necessity.
I have a question. Who could eat more potato chips, Thulu or Ivan Stang?
Well, I'm not sure that potato chips could form any part of the diet of Cthulhu, Cthulhu not being an entirely corporeal entity. But let's not underestimate the gustatory abilities of so powerful and far-ranging a being. Ivan Stang, in his sedate later life, has, for purposes of discipline, curtailed many of his earlier practices and no longer consumes as many potato chips as he did in his salad days, so to speak. So I would have to say that Cthulhu is the more likely battener on potato chips, but either are somewhat unlikely.
Does a good connection with Bob protect you against the damages of large ingestions of
it
fatty
should.
Foods?
It should, because what a subgenius hopes to do is to receive slack,
exactly,
as I'm sure you know, by surfing the luck plane and thus imitating Bob. By putting on Bob, as a Christian puts on Jesus, a subgenius allegedly improves his luck and his relation to the luck plane, and it, unless he conceived it to be good luck to be assimilated by Cthulhu or any other extraterrestrial organism, malignant or otherwise, this would, according to subgenius doctrine, offer him that amount of protection. But you might know that subgeniuses do expect to be lifted off the planet and engaged with sexual congress with alien beings when the econocataclysm or rupture occurs.
Now, wait a second. There was X Day in 1998.
X Day was predicted for 1998.
Is there
going
to be a Y Day?
X Day is celebrated every year. Since 1998, there's been argument over whether or not the date of 1998 was misinterpreted or not. Incidentally, we have a new book out which speaks of this controversy. It's called The Psychedelopedia or The Bob Apocryphon, and it is distributed through Publishers Group West, like my books. It's also in a convenient digest size and not the large, unwieldy size of our first two major books, The Book of the Subgenius and Revelation X. Mm-hmm. Did I say the Bob Apocryphon? I get them mixed up. I think I meant to say the Bobliographon.
Mm. Of course.
That's one that's out currently.
Goes without saying.
We're also reprinting Revelation X. Then there are the out-of-print and rare volumes from the Church of the Subgenius. One of the more interesting of these, I always thought, was Three-Fisted Tales of Bob.
Loved Three-Fisted
Loved
Tales
it.
Of Bob.
Loved
with John Shirley.
Oh, yes,
and,
he was represented
Robert Anton
in there.
Wilson was
yes,
in there.
Yes, he was. And my story in there, The Smoker from the Shadows, as it was called, was nominated for an Edgar Award by the Mystery Writers of America. Nominated, but and that's as far as it went. But still, somebody must have liked it.
You are a high unpredictable of the Church of the Subgenius. And I have to turn to you for some resynchronization and ask you, with the recent election, have we maybe, perchance, entered an age of excess slack? Are we...
By no means is slack to be found in excess. And the conspiracy, as we call it, will not permit true slack to exist or persist for any length of time. But naturally, all are not in equal opposition to this fundamental principle. As in any statistical sampling, some are closer and some are farther. And we may have moved a few degrees closer on the slackometer. But let's be clear about the position of slack and our position anent it.
Thank you.
We were all born with original slack. And should I even describe what slack might be, would that be useful?
Please do.
Please, summer pink to Bob.
Well, it is true. But slack, as its name suggests, is the opposite of tension, and it stands also for leisure. Leisure, as we know, is the basis of culture. Only in leisure are any good things figured out, not under tension. It's only in a state of leisure, after finally escaping the persistent bellowing, charging mammoth, and managing to gather what berries and dead gophers he needs for his sustenance, that the first caveman is able to develop something essential like fire or the wheel or any of the common comic book cliches. But the subgeniuses believe and understand that they, we, are opposed to an overarching entity known as the conspiracy, not the JFK conspiracy or the Republican conspiracy or any of those in particular, though all together they comprise the main conspiracy. The word conspiracy is from the Latin roots conspero, meaning con with, and spero to breathe, as in respiration, inspiration. In other words, those who conspire together breathe together. They need not know that they are in cahoots, but they are fundamentally so organized. So in that sense, they breathe together. Now, the conspiracy doesn't wish you to have slack. It wishes rather for you to work for a living, and it wishes to take away the slack that you were born with and sell you in its place false slack. The way you can tell the difference between false slack and true slack is that false slack does not satisfy, but continues to keep you itching and thirsting for the next increment of false slack, whatever tchotchke it offers, whatever iPod or what have you,
BlackBerry.
Mine's coming next week.
You get it, and you feel, even then, a momentary dissatisfaction and start jonesing for the next piece of false slack. While if you have true slack, you're not necessarily hurting for anything. And this, a subgenius believes, is the supreme state to be achieved. And this was the gift of J.R. Bob Dobbs, the epop of the Church of the Subgenius, the world's truly slackful man.
And how did the subgenius now achieve slack in such a slackless 24/7 kind of culture?
By adhering rigorously to principles of subgenius doctrine.
Does smoking frop help a lot?
Smoking frop is a part of that, but of course frop is difficult to get except for high officials of the church. According to the documents, habifrop zipulops is only available from those who are able to cull it from the droppings of certain Tibetan holy men. But there are succedaneums for frop that many people use, like whiskey, marijuana, mutant sex, other things. These are, in a sense, frop, since they partake of the nature of frop.
Diana, do you have one last question for the Ask Dr. Hell?
Well, you know, a lot of people have. We're very excited to hear that we had the opportunity to speak with you, and this is probably a question you've been asked a lot, but it's one that's haunted me since childhood. So I'm just going to ask you.
Please do.
How many licks does it take to get to the center of a Tootsie Pop?
Well, it depends upon your lingual persistence and
ability. I knew it.
You see, not all
it's
of us are
it?
Tongued alike.
See?
Some of us have tongues which you are uniquely suited to it. What if your tongue curls around the Tootsie Roll Pop and never lifts from its surface until it reaches the mystic center? In that case, it might be said that the lick was a single lick. But, of course, others
prefer... It sounds
prefer
vaguely zen, actually.
Size matters also, right?
Yes, it's quite true. Because a short tongue, sad to say, can't perform this operation. But in any case, the importance, I have to say, is not in the competition toward reaching the center, but in achieving the center.
Thank you.
And on that note, I think that's a fine place to leave it. I want to thank Hal Robbins, a.k.a. Dr. Hal, for joining us. And we'll have links to all things related to Hal Robbins on areyouseriousradio.com. You have...
Well, I wanted to plug my art show, and we didn't speak
absolutely
about my experiences
it
on cable TV when I was on the Conspiracy Zone show on the now extinct TNN network. But perhaps no one needs to know about that. But let me talk about the art show for anyone who's going to be in New York.
Ooh,
it's going to be at the Fuse Gallery in Manhattan. And that is on 92nd Avenue between 5th and 6th Streets. It'll run from January 20th to January 21st, and the reception is on January 20th. I know this is a terribly boring way to close the podcast, but I would appreciate it if anyone's in New York, they would drop in and look at the pictures there, which largely will be the illustrations from my new book, Dinosaur Alphabet, but will also include comic book work and other things.
Well, once again, thanks for coming in, and do join us next week when we will be conversing with the author of a book about chemical warfare.
Love's the only weapon. Shit!
Are you serious?